Welcome into The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols alongside ESPN NBA insider Ramona Shelburne and host of the Low Post podcast. Welcome to Zach Lowe. Coming up this morning, Ramona broke a story on how the Warriors plan to safely fill the Chase Center to 50% capacity if they can get government approval. We will get into that in a little bit. First, though, so you've heard of the DEFCON system, right? It's what the United States military uses to show just how dicey things are for America at any given moment. DEFCON 5 is the most peaceful. DEFCON 1 is basically total nuclear annihilation. And I'm not sure exactly where hot mess is on the sliding scale, but I do know that's where you're going to find the Houston Rockets, who are one of the more tumultuous year-and-a-half runs anyone has seen in recent NBA memory. Remember, it was last July that Houston traded in a mountain of its assets to swap Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook. That started a domino of events that included trading Clint Capella, going all in on micro ball, an injury to Westbrook, a flameout in the NBA bubble, the departure of innovative coach Mike D'Antoni, the departure of former Executive of the Year Daryl Morey, and finally, this past week, reports of James Harden and Russell Westbrook being so deeply dissatisfied that Harden has questioned its direction, while Russ, according to The Athletic, has asked for a trade. This is not the kind of chaos that typically produces championships. In fact, since the Rockets were, quote, a hamstring away from beating Golden State a few years ago, their chances of winning a title have only seemed to diminish. And now the organization is at an extremely uncomfortable crossroads that got even more uncomfortable yesterday, which was Russ's 32nd birthday. The team Twitter account posted this. Awkward. Although the response was amazing, our friend Worldwide Wob, they got the we need to talk and brought over a cake. Also this one, read the room. And dude, he doesn't even like you guys. And this one with Thunder GM Sam Presti. Well, yeah, you get it. Meanwhile, over on Instagram, ESPN posted a clip of Stephen A. Smith saying that Russ and James, quote, don't want to play with each other anymore. To which Russ actually replied in the comments, it's my birthday, but I should say this is completely fabricated. You all have a good night. To further prove his point, Russ also got into the comments on Harden's IG, replying, appreciate it, Brody, after James also wished him a happy birthday. Although when TMZ caught up with Russ later in the evening, having a birthday dinner with his wife and some friends at an LA restaurant, Harden was not in attendance. Anyway, even if there isn't an ounce of friction between Russ and James as friends, clearly there are more issues with them playing together than they had hoped. Russ Westbrook reportedly wants to get back to an offense where he has the ball in his hands more and where everyone on the team is equally accountable. It's not clear if those things can happen in Houston. But it's also not clear if the Rockets can really trade Westbrook either. Russ is indeed now 32 years old, and while earlier this year he played some of the best basketball of his career, that's still a warning light age for any player whose game is built on his athleticism, especially one with several knee and leg injuries under his belt. And that warning light flashes especially high once you figure in his contract. He is owed $132.6 million over the next three seasons and has a $47 million player option in the 2022-23 season. Is another team going to want to trade for that? Are they going to ask that Houston, which already attached a bunch of assets just to get Russ, now attach a few more to get rid of him? Then again, can Houston afford not to trade him if he really is so unhappy? The answer to that depends on where on the whole DEFCON scale you think the Rockets are trending. Will new GM Raphael Stone and new coach Steven Silas be able to cool things down enough to keep the core of the team together? Or do Rockets fans need to head to their bomb shelters, preparing for the whole thing to explode? So, Zach, if there is a situation where the Rockets choose to move Russ, what move makes the most sense for him?
Well, if he wants to play Russ ball and Oklahoma City-style ball, it's not going to be for a contender. So you can cross most of the contenders off the list. But I think the opposite question is the more interesting one. What makes sense for the Rockets? Because if you really want to talk DEFCON 1, DEFCON 1 is when James Harden requests a trade. And if you just salary dump Russ to the Knicks, like, that's possible. You could just salary dump him to the Knicks. You could trade him to Charlotte for Nick Batum's expiring contract and maybe nothing else or something else. You know what signal that sends to James Harden? It's time to get out of here. Houston needs to get back real stuff, or at least a semblance of real stuff, and they cannot afford to give up any more draft picks, or we right away move to the next phase of this drama, which is that Harden looks around and says, wait, that's all you got for Russell Westbrook? So we can talk about what fits Russ, what team could fit Russ, what makes sense for him. But the more interesting question is the flip side. Can Houston find a deal that makes sense for them and appeases their franchise player?
Yeah, look, I like that Charlotte idea, Zach, because he's the signature athlete for Brand Jordan. I think that that's the exact kind of spot where you could see he would become the focal point of that team. That's kind of the way he had it in Oklahoma City. Where he had his best years, where he was an MVP. That makes sense for the Hornets in the sense that, especially Michael Jordan, because you land a big star like this. It reminds me a little of when we were talking about what the Clippers could get for Blake Griffin when they signed him to that 5-year deal. You're probably not going to find anybody who wants to take on that many years and that much money for a player that, frankly, you need to build your team around to justify playing that much money. But the Detroit Pistons, who aren't going to get a star in free agency, if they can trade for him and keep him there for 5 years, the length of his deal actually is an asset. So I like the idea of Charlotte if Russ wants to go someplace. But I actually think it's just going to be hard for anything to happen here, and they might just have to figure out how to play together, unless, as Zach says, the doomsday scenario, James Harden wants out too.
Yeah, I mean, it is complicated, and of course, it's a short offseason, but during this offseason, everyone is kind of in different places. We saw last night, Russ is in Los Angeles, so those face-to-face meetings where you can kind of cool the temperature are a little harder to have right now, too, in the age of COVID as well, which is the topic of our next conversation, guys, as several state governments continue to further lock down in defense of the coronavirus. Warriors owner Joe Lacob unveiling a plan that he hopes would allow 50% capacity in the Chase Center this season. Ramona, you broke this story earlier today. Joe Lacob, as you noted in your piece, he has a master's in public health from UCLA. He's made his fortune in biotech. This is an area, he's not just some fly-by-night, just, hey, let me see what I can do about coronavirus testing. This is one of his specialties. How are the Warriors attempting to accomplish this?
Well, look, the game changer for the Warriors here is that they're not just talking about testing the players or the employees or the staffers. They're talking about testing every single fan who comes in the building, and not just with the rapid antigen-based tests, which are the tests that the White House use, which, you know, the experts I spoke to, Rachel, said those can miss 30 to 50% of people who are infectious. Hmm. If any of those people get through, you're in a bad situation. But there's new technology, which is called a rapid PCR test. This is how, if you're watching Saturday Night Live, that's how they're operating, okay? And these tests right now are pretty expensive, $150, $200, but they are being used in small event group settings. And there's three companies right now that have gotten emergency FDA approval to start making them. They're gonna start increasing scale. Joe Lacob says he thinks by springtime they'll be producing 100,000 of these tests a day. So that's the only way you can make this work. If you do a rapid PCR test, which is 99% effective, okay, takes 15 minutes. You can either do it at the Chase Center or you can do it at drive-through locations around the Bay Area. You can safely say that it's not just 99 out of 100, okay, because there's a lot of people who say, oh, 10,000 fans, that means 100 get through. No, you also have to factor in the rate of coronavirus in the Bay Area, which is right now, I just looked it up 20 minutes ago, 9.9 per 100,000. That means probably out of 10,000 people, you're trying to catch four or five of them that have COVID. And a 99% effective test probably catches those. Then you also back it up with masks and social distancing. The experts I talked to, one was named George Rutherford at UCSF. He said, this is as close to a perfect a plan as you can get. Now, in California, where we don't allow any fans, not even friends and family at a college football game, if they sit three sections apart, it's gonna be a hard sell. Because I think politically, it's gonna be hard to get Logan Breed, the mayor of San Francisco, or Gavin Newsom to sign off on it when cases are rising. But if we can prove the concept, if the Warriors can do that on a small scale, at least maybe 1,000 fans, 2,000 fans first, I think this has a game-changing ability to get everyone back to arenas and really change entertainment, sports, and get people back into arenas safely.
I think this is admirable and perhaps revolutionary, but the virus is just destroying us as a country. We're just getting destroyed by us. It's beating us. We're about to go into lockdowns all over the place again. The laws and the virus are going to dictate what happens. And I admire Joe Lacob trying to fight it. That said, 100,000 tests like this per day, do we really want X thousand of them, 5,000, 10,000, to go to Warriors fans just to fill the Warriors arena? Like, can't we think of something better to do with those tests? And same goes for Hollywood Studios. I mean, we're about to close schools all over the country, and we're sitting here talking about filling an NBA arena to 50% capacity. I mean, it's admirable. I think their heart is in the right place, and the impact could be revolutionary, but it feels like we're just sort of, we're missing the larger point.
Yeah, but that larger point, Zach, then requires the next question.
That was the one question I had, too.
Well, I would just say, guys, the larger point requires that next question of if teams or sporting events or Hollywood studios aren't buying up those tests, is someone else buying them? Because that was one of the questions facing the NBA bubble before they started up things in Orlando. There was some criticism of, oh, the NBA is going to buy up all these tests. Are they taking them away from someone? But the lab was making the tests for them and did not have other government buyers who was going to buy that same amount of tests for normal citizens. So I think part of it is just sort of a play between local governments, state governments, private institutions and hospitals who buy up tests, and private businesses who want to buy up tests to function. Are they taking them, quote, away? Could we think of better things to do with those tests? If us as taxpayers are willing to buy up and fund those tests to the degree that, say, Joe Lacob is, of course they should go to the government and to taxpayers and to people who need them in the general public. You can't look at that in a vacuum and say, why are they buying up all the tests? That doesn't mean there's any for anyone else. Is someone else buying up those tests? Up until now, a lot of our state governments have not done that. It depends on the state and it depends on which test you're talking about. Right, Ramona?
Yeah, you explained that perfectly, Rachel. I mean, I think the big question, and I think this is another thing, just, you know, I kind of knocked the rapid antigen test before, which they're not as accurate, right? But if you use them every day, so if you're talking about schools, right, where you have a huge population, but it's the same population every day, they become more effective because you're testing people more often. So if you say, let's say you missed the virus on day four, but you got it on day five, that is more effective. And I think those antigen tests are far cheaper right now. So there are other plays there. Zach, I actually agree with you. I think that we should probably see these in nursing homes among first line responders. I do think that is coming, though, and I think it's going to come with a national testing strategy that is probably going to come over the winter as we see an administration change. One of the experts I talked to, his name is Rick Klausner. He's advising the Rockefeller Foundation, who one of their lead Biden transition team. And I think that is probably what's going to change this equation here, which is if we, instead of leaving it up to states, if we have more of a nationwide extensive testing policy, then you can produce these in bulk. Then the government can compel other companies to produce them in bulk. And there will be more companies and more tests available in the coming months. So I think by springtime, that ethical question may not be as much of an issue.
That's a great point about an administration change. And it's not a political opinion one way or the other. It's that we had a president of the United States get up and say, I've asked them to slow the testing, that administration's policy was let's do less testing. And therefore, we saw less testing going on in the country. If this new administration has a different approach, we might see more testing throughout and in the public. We'll have to see what happens. All right, coming up, we're going to talk about Shaq claiming he is still the reigning supreme leader of big men. I don't know if that fits on a license plate, but there you go. That means it's time for another edition of BS or Real Talk. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still here with Zach Lowe, Ramona Shelburne, and it's time to play one of our favorite games, BS or Real Talk. We give you the quotes, you tell us how true you think they are. We begin with Celtics president of basketball operations, Danny Ainge, who believes his team would have been there right at the end if they were healthy in the bubble. Here's what Ainge said earlier this week.
You know, we just need to get that step. You know, we're trying to win a championship, and there's some great competition out there. There's some terrific teams, and we're just trying to get to that point and just get back to where we're truly contending for a championship. I felt like we could have been there this year, you know, had we been 100% healthy.
So, Zach, do you think that health stopped the Celtics from getting to those NBA finals and competing for a championship? Is it BS or real talk?
I don't want to do it. I don't like to do it. I don't like the if healthy stuff. I hate it if healthy applies to everybody. But I'm giving them real talk because of that word could. Had Gordon Hayward been healthy, I do think they would have been favored over Miami. So let's say they get by Miami against the Lakers. They're still underdogs, but they're within the range of could. Like, it's not crazy that the fully healthy Celtics team could beat the Lakers. I wouldn't have picked them. I don't think they would have. But I'll give it a very tepid, unhappy, hold my nose real talk because I don't like the if healthy stuff. Everyone would do better if healthy. The Heat wish they were healthy in the finals, and they still won two games against the Lakers.
I'm going to say BS, Rach. Look, I've heard this before. I think the Celtics said the same thing in 2010 when Kendrick Perkins got hurt in the finals. If there's one team that can say we could have contended, we could have been contender if we were all healthy, how about the Miami Heat, who actually had, like, really significant injuries in the finals against the Lakers? I don't know that they can necessarily take that leap. They didn't beat the Heat, and then I don't think they would have been favored against the Lakers.
I will say Danny couched it with, there's great competition, these teams are so good. He wrapped all the stuff. Speaking of winning titles, Steph Curry has three of those. Warriors GM and President Bob Myers is so confident the 32-year-old Curry can play for at least another 8 years. He compared Steph to Tom Brady. Take a listen to what he told NBC Sports Bay Area.
We're hoping Curry can be like a Tom Brady type, you know, so we're hoping he can be 40, whatever the heck he is, and pulling up from half court and being as effective.
The aged Curry photo is amazing. Ramona, is this BS or real talk?
I'm going to say real talk. Like, you know, if Steph wants to play until he's 40, that's fine. I don't think he's going to pay him the same amount as he's making on this current deal. But Steph's going to be able to shoot till he's 40. The question is, can he get by anybody at 40? Brady is able to play at, I think he's 42, 43 at this point. So as a 41-year-old, I'm all for saying that we can all still do things deep into our 40s. But Tom Brady doesn't have to turn the corner or drive past anybody. He can just get out of the way.
I'm going to be like LeVar Ball. I'm going to speak it into existence. I'm going to say real talk. Remember when Dirk Nowitzki was just shuffling down the floor in his last year in his yes. old man shuffle, and he was still clowning people 15 years younger than him because his jump shot was that good? I want to see Steph Curry do the point guard version of that when he's 40 years old, still clowning people, age 40, shimmying up and down the floor. I'm speaking into existence. It's real talk.
Dirk Nowitzki's own team made a video for the Jumbotron comparing him to a mummy that walks down the court kind of like this, because, you know, that's how Dirk is. All right, guys, I want to get to Shaq, who has been very critical of Dwight Howard over the years. We know the history. Despite the fact that Dwight just won a title with the Lakers, Shaq has still refused to take back any of his criticism. Here's what he said on his own podcast, The Big Podcast with Shaq. Quote, "You can only hate if you haven't achieved. I've been there and done that. I'm still the Lord Supreme of all big men. I'm the last big man to get an MVP in the league, so I'm still in charge. When another big man gets an MVP, I will resign gracefully." Zach, resigning gracefully or moving on gracefully, a big topic right now. Is this BS or real talk?
I say this with appropriate fear and respect for Shaquille O'Neal, but it's a little bit BS because Bill Russell and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar are still, what did he call them? Whatever that title
the
was.
The reigning
they
supreme
are that.
Lord
but
of Shaq's all big
right
men.
Right there. That thing. Shaq is that for everybody post-Kareem, but, you know, those two guys are on the Mount Rushmore of basketball. So, and Shaq is right there, too, but he can't be, like, Lord Supreme Commander, whatever he's calling himself.
I mean, look, among the nicknames that Shaq has given himself, Lord Supreme is actually kind of tame. I like Big Diesel, most dominant ever. Like, but he's right. Like, I'm glad he gave Dwight Howard some props because this, you know, Dwight showing that he was willing to sacrifice and play the role the Lakers needed him to play this year in order to win a title, I think puts the cap on a Hall of Fame career. I think Dwight's a Hall of Famer. He has one title, though. Shaq has four. And none of the other big men that I would put in Shaq's category as potentially you can claim that throne have any right now. So to me, Joel Embiid, that is Shaq taking a little poke at you. Mm-hmm. That is ooh, another one that he likes to throw. And never change, Shaq. Please never change.
It's too bad he didn't come up with this earlier because Lord Supreme will have looked really good on the Hall of Fame plaque. I'm just saying. All right, coming up, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George can both opt out and become free agents after next season. But will they? We're going to talk to the little Clippers next right here on The Jump. Keep it locked. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols with Ramona Shelburne, Zach Lowe. And last season did not quite go the way the Clippers envisioned, despite adding Finals MVP in Kawhi Leonard and an MVP finalist in Paul George. The Clippers failed to make the Western Conference Finals, something the franchise still has not done in its entire team history. And now that both Kawhi and Paul George's contracts have opt-outs after this coming season, it begs the question, Ramona, should the Clippers be concerned with either of their stars exiting next summer?
You know what? I think they have to have a sense of urgency. I don't think you need to be concerned. Paul George has said, I know he said it to you, Rachel. I remember him saying it when he literally joined the team. I want to retire a Clipper. That's the plan. He's from here. He's happy here. Kawhi Leonard is I guess, a little concerned that if they had a terrible year this year, he could leave. But he's also from Los Angeles. He came here to win. I think they need to be concerned that the window would be closing. But the reason why those two guys signed those type of deals is because so they can sign another longer term deal at some point, not because they want to leave. The question, though, is really what they need to make this team better. And I think what we learned last year is that your leader cannot be your coach. The loudest voice in the room cannot be your coach. It has to be somebody on the court. And I think Ty Lue's going to give them a different level, different type of style. But I think in this offseason, they really need to acquire a true point guard and somebody who can bring some leadership ability, because Kawhi Leonard missed that Kyle Lowry type point guard. Paul George missed a point guard getting him the ball in the spots that he wants it. No knock on Patrick Beverley, who we all love, but that's not his game. And Kawhi Leonard, frankly, is not LeBron James. He can't just slide over and say, oh, we don't have a real point guard, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. That's not his game either.
Right.
I think Ramona's right. I mean, both these guys signed with the intention of staying in Los Angeles, but have you paid any attention to the NBA in the last 5 years? Like, you take a nap for a month and 17 star players have changed teams. Anything is possible. There's no scenario that's too crazy. If this year goes really wrong somehow, like, of course they should be concerned. They should also be concerned about the flip side, though, is these guys' next contracts are going to take them into their early mid-30s, and they're going to be max contracts. Like, there could be pain on the back end of those contracts, which is why, to Ramona's point, these next 1, 2, 3 seasons are absolutely critical and urgent for the Clippers. If they are going to win a title, their best shot is right now, and they need to really get it right starting this year, starting with Ty Lue, and as Ramona hinted at, maybe tweaking the roster a little bit.
Yes, Ramona, I'm just going to say it. There's a guy with a loud on-court voice who knows how to wear a Clippers uniform who is apparently on the trading block right now. So I'm not going to say Chris Paul's name, but someone should. All right, the Clippers also have several key contributors entering free agency on the flip side, including Sixth Man of the Year, Montrezl Harrell, as well as midseason additions, Marcus Morris, Reggie Jackson. Jamichael Green has yet to decide if he will opt in or out to his $5 million player option. So, Ramona, without a lot of flexibility in the cap, how should the Clippers approach the remainder of this short offseason? Do they go big game hunting? Is there a possibility of Chris Paul coming back? What do they do with these guys on the board who are their own free agents?
Yeah, look, when Chris Paul left the Clippers, I would have said, no way could I see him return to the Clippers one day, because he wanted to go, okay? This wasn't just, you know, them not wanting to give him the 5-year deal. Mm-hmm. It was Chris being tired of the Clippers. But let me remind you, Chris Paul's family did not move from Los Angeles last year. Okay, they still are here. He's never won, and this is a team that's ready made to win. I think that I don't think that bridge was burned. I mean, maybe it was knocked down a little bit. We could put some planks back in. But I think their priority this offseason has to be getting a point guard. If it's not like a big trade for Chris Paul, I think it'd be hard for them to have the kind of assets to acquire Chris Paul via trade. If it's a one-to-one deal, they'd have to probably involve a third team there. But there's another guy, I don't know, that was like playing on the Lakers last year who was maligned during the season, but then came alive in the playoffs and won another ring, playoff Rondo. I don't know if he's free agent too, if you can get him.
First of all, it would be pretty incredible if the Clippers traded all the guys they got from the Rockets for Chris Paul to the Thunder to get Chris Paul back. That would be pretty incredible. But the Clippers are in a tough spot because they have no path to cap space, meaning
amazing,
if any of their outgoing free agents walk, they can't really replace them. So they'll cross their fingers Jamichael Green opts in. They'll probably re-sign Marcus Morris. And then the big piece becomes Montrezl Harrell. That's a player they cannot afford to lose for nothing. Some of the cap space seems may or not be interested in him. Their interest level is unclear. Can they turn him into a sign and trade for that point guard that we're talking about, that elusive playmaker? Do they keep him on a 2-year, $30 million deal or something because the market for him is a little cooler than expected, and then turn him into something at the trade deadline? Montrezl Harrell is the player that I'm watching most closely for them.
Very interesting. Well, certainly a team that wants to be in top contention this season, so we expect to see them making moves, and they're going to have to make them in like the next 3 weeks because that's when training camp starts. All right, coming up, amidst a cloud of Rockets uncertainty, Robert Covington is going to join us here on The Jump next. He will chat about how he found a way to give his alma mater a gift they will never forget, as well as, well, the latest with the Rockets. And here's what The Jump recommends for today. Our ESPN.com's Royce Young taking us behind the scenes of how the Timberwolves are navigating what to do with the number one pick in the days leading up to Wednesday's draft. This is a good one. Read it during the break. We'll be back right after this. At this time, we'd like to welcome our next guest, recognized as All-Defense First Team 2018. Of course, he's had a couple stops since then. Rockets forward Robert Covington joining The Jump. Always so good to have you back. Thanks for hopping on with us.
Man, thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
You did something huge, huge. On Thursday, you announced a seven-figure donation to your alma mater, Tennessee State University, brand new men's and women's basketball practice facility. What inspired you to make such a significant donation?
Because, you know, when I was here, I seen how much stuff that other facilities had and, you know, the things that, you know, they had access to. So, you know, for me, you know, just being able to give back and, you know, be able to do my part, like it's time. And, you know, like I said, I'm here, you know, in this city, you know, a lot. I see these kids. I see what they, you know, have access to, because like I said, I've had the same access to those same things. And, you know, for me to, you know, do this for my alma mater is a big thing, because like I said, it's many that have done stuff before me. And, you know, now it's my time to, you know, give back and, you know, help them, you know, elevate themselves. Because like you said, this whole movement, you know, with HBCUs and having it, like, why can't we have the same access to the same facilities and everything that, you know, these other universities have, and they're having sponsors and everyone donate to them. So, you know, for us, you know, I feel like my program, you know, where I grew up in as a man, as a player, mm-hmm. and what helped mold in me, like, they deserve to have that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just all kinds of opportunities you are handing down to the generations coming behind you. It is so impressive. And you mentioned HBCUs. You're one of only two players in the league right now to have attended an HBCU. What does that mean to you? And what do you want to see change in the future in terms of that?
For, you know, more kids to, you know, experience that, you know, going to HBCU was the best college experience I could ever imagine. And, mm-hmm. you know, everyone always says that, like, if you would have went anywhere else, like, would you have been able to do something? No, I wouldn't have went nowhere else. Like, I had the opportunity to transfer, but I didn't. I loved everything about where I was at. So I had already established myself in this program, you know, at OVC, and I had already put my imprint on everything. So why not finish what I started? And that's what I was always big on. So for me, you know, to be here in this moment, like you said, it's life-changing, you know, because it's going to impact generations to come. So, you know, for me to be able in this position, you know, it's not only will I have access to it as well, but, you know, we can help these kids get knowledge from a lot of different people. And, you know, we can actually use this as an attraction point, you know, for kids and, you know, for some players. Like, people don't realize that Nashville is actually a really great city. And it's very uplifting. So there's so much that has changed over the past 10 years since I've been here.
Absolutely. And look, we are seeing more and more prospects say they're considering outside the box thinking. It's not just the major sort of big profile programs. And I think you and some of the other people who are putting the spotlight on HBCUs are definitely giving them an alternative path that can be so rewarding. In fact, it's so rewarding. You ended up in the NBA, so you've done just fine. And I want to ask about your Houston Rockets life. You just got a new coach, Steven Silas. What is your reaction to the hire? Have you spoken to him yet?
Yes, I've spoken to him. He's a good dude. And, you know, he's already said that he wants to change the dynamic of things. And, you know, he has so much that he has in tune for us. And, you know, with the program that we have and with the team that we have, like, he can do a lot. And, you know, he wanted this job to, you know, be able to make a change and, you know, have the opportunity to coach two prolific MVP caliber superstars. And, you know, not too many people get that opportunity as their first head coaching job. So he's up for the challenge. And, you know, he's told me that, you know, he wants everyone to be as mentally focused and mentally locked in. And, you know, just overall, you know, continue to come in and work, because, like I said, it's going to be a different transition of what his dynamic is. So, you know, he's just excited for the opportunity.
Well, you mentioned those two MVP caliber players. There are ESPN reports out there from this past week that indicate Russell Westbrook, James Harden have expressed uncertainty about the direction of the franchise, that they're not at the point either one of them of asking for a trade, but that that's not out of the question down the road. How do you feel when you hear that?
I don't know what they're, I haven't really talked too much, because, like I said, I'm, you know, one of the guys that just, you know, I have to go in and do what I have to do. And, you know, those are the two focal points of the team. So with them, they are more engaged in that. And, you know, I understand, you know, uncertainty and how people may feel about certain things. But like you said, it's new. Like, everything is, it's a whirlwind right about now. So everything's not going to make sense, because, like you said, so much is happening all at once. There's so many decisions that have to be made in such a short amount of time. So it's not like a typical year of what we've been doing. Yeah. I can understand where they're coming from about uncertainty, but because no one really knows right now. Like, you know, we've had two major changes, GM and coach. So we don't know just yet. Like, everything has to continue to just fall into play. And once that all happens, then that kind of give you a clear direction of what the objective is. And like you said, everyone knows that the main objective is to win the championship.
Certainly. And we heard your new GM say this is a win now team, which is, I know, music to the ears of any player. You mentioned that Coach Silas says that things are going to change for next season in a good way. What are your expectations? What is going to change for the Rockets next season? What does he talk to you about?
Just the way we play, you know, some ways of, you know, guarding, you know, having small ball at times, you know, but having a dynamic big man and everything. And, you know, just incorporating to bring out the best of both of our superstars and put ourselves in position to where we can bring out the best of both of them. And he said that he's up for that challenge, and he wants to, you know, them to get back to the MVP status for both of them, because they both can do it. They both can do it. And, you know, James has done it for significant years, and Russ has done unbelievable for the past 3-4 years. And, you know, he wants them guys to get back to that same caliber, because that will take us over the hump. And, you know, we're going to follow right behind them guys. They're our leaders. They're the ones that, you know, leading by example. And like I said, if we clicking on all cylinders, man, we've already showcased what this team can do.
Well, we will all be watching, and we'll be watching soon, because apparently you're playing like tomorrow. Well, okay, end of December, but close enough. Thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck as you prepare for next season. And again, congratulations on what you did yesterday. So impressive. We will be watching that as well as that develops over the coming years.
Thank you, Rach.
And it's crunch time here on The Jump. Tim Duncan's one-year run as an assistant coach appears to be over. Mark Stein reporting he will step away from his full-time spot on the Spurs staff. Ramona, do you see another coaching role in Timmy's future?
Well, you know, I'm surprised by this. I'm a little bummed out by it, because, you know, he was always the guy who would step in when Pop would miss a game here. And it made me think he was eyeing this as his future. We still don't know who's going to be the replacement for Pop when he eventually retires. So, I thought Timmy might have been that guy. But if he's stepping away here, obviously maybe it's not.
Yeah, I'm going to miss having Tim Duncan around the NBA day to day, but I can't say I'm surprised. I never got the sense this was the permanent thing for him, but you can't rule out another coaching gig, I guess. You got a taste of it.
What's he going to do with all the clothes? I mean, we've never seen Tim Duncan in this many suit jackets before.
That's a great point.
He bought all this new stuff, and now, please, maybe he'll find a lovely place to donate it to. Let's talk about the Phoenix Suns.
He can wear them when he plays paintball.
There you go. Boom. The Suns unveiled their new City Edition jerseys on ESPN.com. A story broken by Zach Lowe. Are you a fan, Zach, of the new Black Valley jerseys?
I am, more than I thought I would be. I'm typically not a black jersey guy. I think it's kind of lazy, but the colors really like sing off of the black. It's really bright and shiny. I kind of like it. It's growing on me.
Dude, I think those are the best jerseys. I think Charlotte and the Sun City jersey are the best ones I've seen so far this year. And I love Kelly Oubre getting out of the car like that. He totally sold it.
That was amazing. With the horse and the whole nine was incredible. Yeah, I love the Charlotte jerseys as well. We need to have like a whole jersey retrospective the next time you guys are both on. We'll work on that. Everyone's new City Edition jerseys. Let's talk about the NCAA. They announced plans for a series of basketball tournaments dubbed Bubbleville. The event will feature 40 teams playing at Mohegan Sun in Connecticut between November 25th and December 5th. Ramona, do you think the NBA is going to have to check down to these kinds of regional bubbles at any point this season?
I really hope not. I mean, Rage, I think we've seen from baseball and from the NFL that we are going to see teams that have some COVID cases. The NBA, if they're not going to do a bubble like they did in Orlando, you're going to have some outbreaks. Obviously, the NBA is not as socially distant as baseball naturally is, and they don't have as much time between games as football. So I am worried about it, but I hope it doesn't come to these regional bubbles, because I think even just saying that, doesn't that send you into like a cold sweat thinking about going back to a bubble? I mean, I wasn't there, but you experienced that firsthand.
And
every guy
panic.
I talked to who
yeah.
did.
Like,
yeah.
Well, the players would have to agree to it too, and I don't think any of the players union are super excited about the idea of introducing a bubble again, maybe for the finals or something. But you know, the Knicks practice facility being closed this week and this Bubbleville stuff, it's a wake-up call. Like, we're back in the real world. This is going to be an issue. It's not going away. In fact, it's getting worse.
Yeah, and it will be interesting to see the story we started with at the top of the show, Ramona's story on testing, whether that impacts how leagues are able and sports and the NBA teams in specific are able to function just within their small group. Forget fans, but just within the players and the people in the organization. Yeah. And, of course, there's been national news on vaccines that sort of ramped up in the last couple of weeks. So we'll see how that affects the NBA season as well. Bubbleville, though, for the end of this month for college basketball, and we'll see how that goes, too. All right, now that the season is, though, on track to start, you know what that means, my friends. Las Vegas starting to release preseason odds. Caesars William Hill recently released theirs for MVP for the upcoming season. At the moment, the co-favorites are two-time defending MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo, as well as Luka Doncic. They also have Anthony Davis ahead of LeBron, with Steph, Kawhi, KD, and Harden also on the board. Oh. Zach, I'm going to be honest. When I started reading out that line and said two-time defending, I was like, wait, Giannis isn't defending anything, but he is for sure defending his two MVPs. Ooh. Well, no, I mean, normally we say two-time defending. That means champion, right? So in this case, he is absolutely... Do you defend an MVP? Do you defend an MVP, Zach? I don't know.
I think I think you can defend it. Yeah, I think you do. Yeah.
Okay, deal. He's the two-time defending champion, and is he your early MVP favorite right now, Zach?
No, I'm going to go Luka Doncic. I wanted to go LeBron because I feel like he's come second so many times, but I'm just afraid he's going to load manage a lot of games this year. And by the way, justifiably so. Maybe we shouldn't even knock him any credit for that. But I do feel like, fair or not, and I don't think it's totally unfair, I think voters are going to be very hesitant to award Giannis a third straight MVP, even if he has the best statistical case, because of the two straight playoff disappointments. I think there's going to be a widespread hesitancy among the voting body to do that. So I think Luka is the safest choice.
Yeah, Rachel, can I get those odds on Kevin Durant?
Yeah.
Is that plus 1,500? I mean, give me that right now. I was going to say Kevin Durant anyway, because I think his storyline coming back from the Achilles injury, starting with the new team in Brooklyn, I like what they have going. I spoke to a couple people who saw him working out recently here in Los Angeles. They said he looked great. If Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant again in the Eastern Conference and the Nets move up in the playoff seedings where he's the guy, I like that pick a lot with those odds. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I absolutely like those too. Although we should clarify for everyone, you are not betting on the players you cover. Maybe
a
few M&Ms back and forth.
If you were to.
Right, exactly. We can give you odds on M&Ms or something like that. I think it is going to be interesting. I think the way that players load manage, quote unquote, is certainly going to take into account. But I do wonder if playoff, look, we saw it with James Harden, right? There was a little bit, I wouldn't even call it voter fatigue. I would say that that it was sort of voter education after a couple seasons, that voters were looking for more of a killer instinct for him than they saw in those ensuing postseasons. And it's possible they're going to feel the same way about Giannis. All right, guys, as we say farewell, shout out to the NBA. As USA Today reports, nearly 300,000 votes were made inside NBA arenas this election. That is awesome and a change we all needed. So congratulations to everyone who participated in that.